we left off last week, we were talking about the two different approaches in the Rishonim about what exactly a Matanah Menas Tahachzir is all about. We know for a fact that it works in many areas of halacha, just not all areas of halacha, with the exception of Kiddushin. We know specifically that it works for the purposes of Luv V'Esrog. So it does make the Luv V'Esrog considered to be Shalachem of the recipient. The question is, what exactly are the parameters of the statement? So the Rosh, that is a famous interpretation, when the Rosh tells us that Matanah Menas Tahachzir is the equivalent of a Kinyan La'olam. It's a complete Kinyan for eternity, within a certain sense, no strings attached. So there are no strings attached, so how come you have to return it? Well, there is a string attached. The string attached is Betoras Tanai. It's a condition, but the condition doesn't impact on the duration of the transaction. The transaction is the Olam Vod. It's a Kinyan La'olam. It just happens to be, almost as a tangential point, by the way, there's a Tanai that you have to return it. And the Rosh proved that if not for the fact that a Matanah Menas Tahachzir was a Kinyan Li'olam, so then that wouldn't suffice to fulfill the mitzvah of Dalaminim. Because in order to be called Lachem, it has to be Lachem Li'olam Vod. So we saw that the one who disagreed was Rabbeinu Avigdor, eventually supported later on by the Ketos, who said, no, the very premise of the Rosh is not correct. That in order to be called Lachem, as long as it's Lachem B'Shas Maisa, what do I care that's Lachem Li'olam Vod? As long as it's Lachem, the time that I'm taking to live in Esrog, that would be good enough. So what is a Matanah Menas Tahachzir according to Rabbeinu Avigdor? It is in fact not a Kinyan Li'olam. It is only a Kinyan L'Zman. If it's a Kinyan L'Zman, how is it fundamentally different than a She'ela than a loan? So the answer is, a She'ela is not even a Kinyan Aguf L'Zman. It's merely a Kinyan Peiros. It's a Zchus Hishtamshus. It's the rights of usage. It's not a Kinyan in the Guf HaDavar. But a Kinyan in the Guf HaDavar, albeit not a Kinyan Li'olam, would be sufficient. According to Rabbeinu Avigdor in the Ketos, the Torah says, L'kachtem Lachem. Lachem means now. By the way, it's going to be in a year from now, 20 years, now 50 years. Right now, first day of Sukkot, 9 o'clock in the morning, if it belongs to me with a Kinyan Aguf, that's good enough. So it's a really conceptual machlokes. How do you define Lachem? And ultimately spills over, how do you define what a Matanah Menas Tahachzir is and what it, and perhaps it's not. However, when we go back to the Rosh's understanding of a Matanah Menas Tahachzir, it is a very strange idea, a very strange thing, that I'm giving you a Kinyan La'olam, and by the way, you're going to return it to me. Isn't that a strange type of a concept? So the answer is, it's not all that strange. It's not fundamentally stranger than all of us to know him. You know that there's a parasha of the Torah of Tanai coming up in a few weeks from now, Parashas Matos, where the Torah tells us that Moshe Rabbeinu was the representative of Klal Yisrael, in fact, is transferring ownership on the Eivar HaYarden, on the east side of the Yarden, to the Bnei Gad, Bnei Reuven, Chetashe, Menashe, and he's handing over to them this property that's going to become theirs in the Eivar HaYarden, on the condition that they're going to do X, Y, Z, they're going to come, they're going to fight, etc. So the Mishnah, Maseches Kedushin, third parak, derives from here that you can make many, many chalosim, many types of transactions, many types of changes in status, Kedushin, Gittin, Mechiris, etc., ala Tanai, on the condition. And the question becomes, how do you understand this notion of a Tanai? Because if Matanah Menas Tahachzir, according to the Rosh, is basically just part of Mishpatei Torah, part of the parasha of Tanoim, how do you understand in global terms what exactly a Tanai is all about? So there is a Gemara in a few places that tells us that whenever a person tries to make a Kinyan, tries to make a Kedushin, a Gerushin, ala Tanai, and they didn't do it appropriately, they didn't word the Tanai 100% right, there are certain details that are derived from Sukkim, how exactly a Tanai has to be worded, this machlok is a Tanai, what some of those details are. According to one opinion, you have to have what's called a Tanai kuffel. You have to say that if such and such happens, then the condition will be chal. And if such and such doesn't happen, then the condition won't be chal. If you don't say it tonight, kofel, then the whole tonight disappears. The whole tonight is batel mevutel. That's the machlokes ha'tanaim. Then you have other details in Uchos Tanaim, how it has to be formulated properly. The Gemara says a very, very, it appears to be a very strange din. Let's say a person made a kedusha, made a get ala tonight, and they forgot to word it 100% properly. So then we say that the tonight is batel, v'maisekayim, that the transaction that you try to do takes effect even if the Tanai was never fulfilled. If I made a kosher Tanai, if the Tanai was done, kedasuch, and it was done properly, so then the Maisa hinges upon the fulfillment of the Tanai. But if the Tanai wasn't worded properly, so then we just ignore, we just cancel what you said, and Mamela, the Chalos, the Kedusha, the Gerish, the Mechir, etc., will take place even in the absence of the fulfillment of the Tanai. So Tosos already is bothered with the question. Tosos Ksuba Stafan involved is bothered with the problem. What are the mechanics of that? How does that work? I don't want it to happen. Reuven said explicitly, I'm only divorcing you on the condition that you give me $100.
But he forgot to double up the Tanai. He forgot to open up Parshas Matos and say the Tanai properly. At the end of the day, he doesn't want to divorce her. At the end of the day, he said explicitly, I'm divorcing you if you give me $100. He forgot to say, oh, by the way, if I don't, So it says, Tosfos, even if the Tanai wasn't worded properly, at the end of the day, isn't there a deficiency in the Das of a Garish? Isn't at the end of the day, the Baal doesn't want to divorce his wife? So Tosfos writes, no. Tosfos writes that whenever you have a Tanai, so the Das is there as a Das Shalim. The Das is there as a Das Shalim. The Das is there in its entirety. The person wants to go through with the entire Chalos. Elohim, he put a little bit of a break on the Chalos. He put a little bit of a hold on the Chalos. If the hold was put properly, so then it could prevent the Chalos from taking place unless the terms, the conditions are met. If for whatever reason the hold wasn't wasn't formulated properly, so then we just ignore it, and then the chalos follows through. Says tells us what a tanai is not. A tanai is not a limitation in the chalos. A tanai is not saying that I don't really want to do it. A tanai is saying I'm doing it b'leiv shalem, b'das gemura. I'm hereby ready up. There's just what we call, what the Gemara uses in a different phrase, tanai milsa charisa. Tanai is something which is external. Tanai is something which is pulling the brake on the side, but it's not something that gets to the very essence of the chalos, the very essence of the das itself. And when I was the first year in YU, in Rabbi Willick's year, so we were learning Maseches Machos at the time, and the very beginning of Maseches Machos is a sugya that comes up about Tanai. So Rabbi Willick gave us his famous mashal about how to explain this yesod of what a Tanai is, what a Tanai is not. So he said, it's mashal mother v'doma, if a person is driving, and you have your foot on the gas and on the brake at the same time. So the car's not going anywhere, because your foot's on the brake. But the minute that you take your foot off the brake, so the car goes, you know, the car goes because your foot's on the gas also. So at the same time, you can have something which is going full force ahead, and you can have a brake. The only thing is that right now when the brake is on, so the car is not moving. Doesn't mean the gas is not being pumped. Doesn't mean that the car is not ready to roll. The car is ready to go. It's just that something minachot that's stopping it. My nafkamina. If your brakes don't work, so then the car is going to go straight forward because the gas is being pumped into the car. So I remember when I first heard that mashal, so I didn't appreciate the mashal until a couple of years later when I was learning how to drive. I learned how to drive in Washington Heights. So my driving teacher was a fellow from one of the people who lives in the neighborhood. His name was Hector. Hector, I don't know if those remember why Hector's during a driving school. So once he was taking me up the 185th Street hill, so I was sitting at the top of the 185th in Wadsworth, and as the light turned green, I started to fall backwards. So I got a little nervous. So he said to me, let me teach you how that's never going to happen again. He said, when you sit on the top of a hill, so when you have your foot on the brake, you have to have one foot on the gas also. That way, when the light turns green and you take your foot off the brake, you're already going forward. Otherwise, you end up falling back and down to Broadway. That was his muscle. When I heard that muscle, that was Reverend Willie's muscle. That was it. When you have your foot on the gas and foot on the brake at the same time, the car's always going forward. It's not going forward right now because the foot's on the brake, but the car's basically, in Lumbus, the car's still going forward. So that's exactly, almost exactly, what the Rush is saying here also. That's what a Matara Manas Achzer is. A Matara Manas Achzer is not like Rabbi Avigdor says, it's only a Matara. And for the next 10 minutes, Ad Kan V'lo Yosef. No, that's not the pshat. It's a matara, the car is full of gas, and the gas is going and going, the matara is going full speed ahead. It happens to be that matara is going to be affected by the existence of a tanai. The tanai was amanas tahachzir, but the amanas tahachzir of the tanai does not impact on the etzem matara. The etzem matara is full force. The etzem matara is a kidney in the oilam. Because argued the Rush, if it wouldn't have been a kiddush le'olam, then it wouldn't have been acceptable. It wouldn't have qualified as lachem. So when all the dust settles, we have a major machlekes rishonim. The Rush of Rabbeinu Avigdor, what is and what is not a matara was a hachzir. Remember back from last week, this machlekes was impacted by a sugya that appears towards the end of Maseches Sukkah, where the Gemara says that one is not allowed to give a lulav an esrog on the first day of Sukkot to a child. Because of all the complications that the child's going to acquire it, but he's not going to be able to transfer it back. So one of the proofs that the Rush brought to his shita is, what's so terrible? Why can't you give it to a child? just give it to him as a matan amanas lahachzer. If my colleague Rabbeinu Avigdor is right, that matan amanas lahachzer is a kinyan lizman, and when the zman ends, there's no need to return it back to me. It just happens by itself. So says the Rosh, if Rabbeinu Avigdor is right, why can't I give it to a child? I give it to a child with that understanding that at the end of, in 10 minutes from now, after he finishes shaking it, it will revert back to me without a Maisa Kinyan. What's wrong with that? So the Rosh says, from the fact that the Gemara didn't give that as an Eitzah, you see from here that that wouldn't be good enough for Dalal Minim. That was the Rosh's big Raya. To which Rabbeinu Avigdor would respond, it could have been given as a Eitzah. It's a possibility. The Gemara didn't give you 100 Eitzahs. The Gemara just told you what not to do. The Gemara didn't bother telling you what to do. But in Nechanami, that Eitzah would work. So, Bein Lefi Arosh, Bein Lefi Rabbeinu Avigdor, when you want to give your child a lulav and esrog on the first day, you're really in a pickle, because you don't want it that he doesn't acquire it altogether. If he doesn't acquire it properly, then he's not being yotzei the mitzvahs. That's a problem. On the other hand, you don't want him to acquire it in a way that he can't give it back to you. So according to the Rosh, you're in checkmate. According to the Rosh, there's no case to give it to him that he can be yotzei and also get it back from him. Because the only way to give it to him is it has to be a matana gemura or a manas lahachzer, which is like a matana gemura. Once it's a matana gemura, then he can't give it back to you. So according to the Rosh, it's impossible. According to Rabbeinu Avigdor, you could walk between the cracks. According to Rabbeinu Avigdor, you could walk this fine line that I'll give it to him as a kinyan lizman or as a matana lahachzer, which is like a kinyan lizman. At the sofa's man, when he finishes shaking, it will come back to me by itself. So in theory, according to Rabbeinu Avigdor, that would work. The premise of everything we just said in the last 5 minutes is that the lulav and esrog has to belong to the child. You have to figure out how to walk the tightrope. According to the Rosh, there's no way to fall. You fall off the tightrope. According to Rabbeinu Avigdor Bekoshi, you can find the scenario. But the common denominator of both of the Rishonim was is that in order to fulfill the din of lulav and esrog for the child, he must own that lulav and esrog, which is really a little bit of a question. Why is that so necessary? After all, he's only a child. He's not yet a gil bar mitzvah. So why are we so careful about him owning the lulav and esrog? So the chora, the answer to that question is, the Gemara says a little bit later on in Masechta Sukkah, that when a child reaches the age of doing mitzvahs, you have to be mechanechim to do the mitzvahs. So the pashto says is that you have to be mechanechim to do the mitzvahs properly. That I can't be mechanech the child to do the mitzvah in a manner that he wouldn't be yaitzeh when he's a grown up. The whole goal of chinuch is to train him properly. So we have to train him to do mitzvahs properly. So I must train him to fulfill lukach dam lachem b'yom harishon. I can't just give him a lulav and esrog that's not kosher. I can't buy him a chinuch set that wouldn't be, if the chinuch set is kosher, that's fine. But I can't buy him a chinuch set that's not kosher, because otherwise that's very poor chinuch. That's the antithesis of chinuch. So the pashas from the Rosh, from Rabbeinu Avigdor, everything we've been saying, is that chinuch requires not just to go through the external parts of the mitzvah, but to really go with each of the intricacies, each of the dinim, whatever's ma'akeh for gol is ma'akeh for kotan. And that's why we have such a problem of getting the details of lachem into place, notwithstanding the fact that this child is under the age of bar mitzvah. So this idea that chinuch must be done with all the proper details is not so simple that is in fact the case. This is actually, in a certain sense, the bridge to the next year. Did we decide we're learning Sukkah next year? The yeshiva is learning Sukkah next year. Was that our decision? Okay. If not, we just decided. Yeah. No, okay. So the very beginning of Masechta Sukkah, the base of Masechta Sukkah, so if you remind me, when we start Mitzvah next year, so we're gonna pick up a little bit, not the first sugya, one of the first few sugyas touches on this. There is a Gemara on the base of Masechta Sukkah that impacts what we're talking about now in terms of Lulav. The Gemara quotes a Machlekes, the first Mishnah actually in Sukkah quotes a Machlekes at Tanoim about what the maximum height of a Sukkah is. So Rabbi Yehuda holds there's no maximum height. Sukkah could be as tall as you want. And the Chacham say, no, a sukkah can't be more than 20 amos tall. It's the first Mishnah, Sukkah, the Malik, Esimam, Psula. The first Mishnah, Masechet Sukkah. Why can't a sukkah be more than 20 amos? That's a big machlekes, three-way machlekes in the Gemara. Hopefully, Mishnah will have a lot to talk about next year. But Rabbi Yehuda disagrees with the whole first Mishnah. Rabbi Yehuda says it's not true. A sukkah above 20 amos is acceptable. So Rabbi Yehuda is trying to bring a proof to his Shita that a sukkah above 20 amos is kshera. He brings this story. The story was about Hilni Hamalka. Hilni Hamalka was a fascinating personality. She was a non-Jewish queen, Greek queen, whatever part of the world she was from. And she actually converted. She was a sincere convert to Judaism. And the Gemara tells many, many stories about her. she dedicated certain things to the Beis Hamikdash. The Mishnah talks about very, very, very fine stories about this woman, Hilni Amalka. So the Gemara tells a story about Hilni Amalka, who was once sitting in a sukkah. She was sitting in a very royal type of a sukkah, and the sukkah was well above 20 amas. So Beauty says, you see from here that a sukkah above 20 amas is good, because the Chachamim used to visit her. And the Gemara says that nobody criticized her, nobody corrected her. So for the fact that the Chacham came to visit her in her sukkah, you see from here that a sukkah above 20 amos is kshera. So the Chacham responded back to Rabbi Yehuda, that's not a very good riot. She was a woman. It was a psula sukkah. So they wanted to get chepra for. She was a nice lady trying to do her best. Didn't matter anyway whether the sukkah was kshera or not. So that's why they didn't respond to her. So Rabbi Yehuda responded back to the Chacham, no, it's not true. Even though she was Ptura, but she has children, she had sons, so her sons had to sit in the kosher sukkah. So the Chacham responded back to the Rabbi Yehuda and says, but her sons were little. They were little kids. So Rabbi Yehuda says, no, but at least one of them was over the age of chinuch. How did Rabbi Yehuda know one of them was over the age of chinuch? Because she had seven sons. One says, it was Hilni Amalka v'Shimon Banel. If you make a simple calculation, unless you have quadruplets and triplets or something, which I guess Chacham apparently knew that they didn't have, so then inevitably you can have at least one who's over the age of chinuch. The age of chinuch for sukkah is about six, seven, or something like that. So you have seven kids, it's going to be hard not to have one who's over the age of chinuch. So that was Rabbi Yehuda's rise. Rabbi Yehuda says, yeah, see from here that the sukkah must have been kshera. So the Chacham respond back and forth, the whole sukkah in the base of a second sukkah. So the Ritva on the spot, and that sugi Masech HaSukkah says, wait a second, says, if the kids were really under bar mitzvah, even if they were 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 years old, as long as they were not yet bar mitzvah, why was it so important that the sukkah be kshera? Why is that so critical? How could Rabbi Yehuda bring a proof from the fact that Hilni Amalka used this sukkah, and the fact that Chum didn't stop her because the 12-year-old boys were sitting in the sukkah? Yeah, see from here that the sukkah is kshera. Ma pitom, says the Ritva, maybe the sukkah is psula. Maybe it only that kosher sukkah. It's only chinuch. It's only darbana chinuch. Who says that chinuch requires an absolute replica of a real bona fide mitzvah in the Torah? So the Ritva says, who says? The Gemara says. You see from this Gemara, from the whole Shach Matai, the whole discussion back and forth between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chum, the premise that everybody agrees to, that the sukkah must be kshera. How do you explain how it's kshera? That you have to work out the details. But the fact that the sukkah has to be kshera, that was not negotiable. That's what the Ritva says. So notwithstanding what the Ritva says, there is a Mordechai in Maseches Sukkah that disagrees. How the Mordechai would read this Gemara is a different story, but this is Mordechai Beferish, who quotes from Rishonim, quotes from the Rav Yov, not mistaken, the Rav Yov, the Ravan, if you had a Rishonim, the Balei Tosfos, the Mordechai quotes, who says that it's not true, the whole thing is not true, that whenever you do something for the purposes of Chinuch, as long as you basically got it right, it looks close enough, that's okay. Let's say Lamasha for a Luv and Esrig. So it has to basically be a Luv and Esrig. All right, so it's split on top. Oh, it's got a little small hole in it. It has little psulim, little chesronis, little things that disqualify it. As long as it has a chal Hashem Luv and Esrig, that's okay. Let's say you take a stuffed Luv and Esrig, like the little 3-year-olds walking around with it from the Judaica stores. That's a joke. That's not a Luv and Esrig. That's a stuffed animal. So that wouldn't be good enough. Usually those kids who are shaking the stuffed Luv and Esrig are lohigil l'chinuch anyway. The age of a Gil Lechinuch, the Gemara says, is each mitzvah changes according to that mitzvah. So let's say, a Gil Lechinuch for Sukkah, the child has to be old enough to sleep by himself without waking up in the middle of the night and calling for his mother, hysterical. So he has to be able to be old enough to do that. Then he's chayev in Sukkah. So let's say, for the purposes of tzitzis, he has to be old enough to know how to dress himself. For the purposes of lulav, he has to know how to shake the lulav and esrog properly. If you give him a lulav and esrog and he takes it and he hits his younger brother over the head with it, so that's a sign that he's lo Gil Lechinuch. So each mitzvah is its own way. So comes the Mordechai and says, whenever you're doing a mitzvah for the purposes of chinuch, it doesn't have to be perfect. As long as it's basically the tzurusa mitzvah, that would be good enough. So that machlok is now between the Mordechai and the Ritva is now going to become critical for us in terms of this Batar Ras Nahachsa story. So let's say you have a person, comes the first day Sukkot, and he didn't buy his child a little bit of esrog, so he only has his own little bit of esrog, and he really, really wants his child to be Yotzei the mitzvah with that Luv and Esrog. What options are available for him? So if he's a Ben Eretz Yisrael, lives in Eretz Yisrael, it's no big deal. Let him shake the Luv and Esrog first, and then afterwards he should give it to the child as a regular matana. And then by the time the second day of Yisukas rolls around, it's ready the first day Chol HaMoed. And Chalamayit, there's no din of Lachem, so everything that would be perfect. But if you live in Chutz Laretz and you have a problem, because in the first day of Sukkot, even though I was Yotzei already Machir min HaTorah, if I give it to the child today and he owns it and he can't give it back to me, then when tomorrow rolls around, when I'm Mechuyav in the Tilis Lulav Al Tziyantav Sheni, so Yantav Sheni, we treat with all the Chumras of Yantav Rishon, so I have to own the Luvan Esrog. So Mamash in a pickle, so what do I do? So if I give it to the child as a kinyan le'olam, so then I'm in a big problem. That the Gemara says you can't do, and then there's no etzah. So the kid will be yotze. But tomorrow I'm going to have to go get another matana from somebody else, another matana is achzah from my neighbor. I won't be able to use my own little benesik to us. I don't want to do that. So for me to give it to my child as a kinyan le'olam, that's not going to be acceptable. For me to give it to my child as a kinyan lizman, so that's very tricky. If I give it to him and I say I'm giving it to you as a kinyan lizman, according to the Rush, that's no good. According to the Rush, the child isn't Yotzei. According to Rabbeinu Avigdor, so that would be acceptable. If I give it to the child as a Matanam Ras Tahachzir, that's also going to depend on this. According to the Rush, Matanam Ras Tahachzir, by definition, is a kid in the Olam, which gives it to the child, but doesn't have the ability to give it back to me. But according to the Rabbeinu Avigdor, so in theory, I could give it to the child, I'm a Ras Tahachzir, because it's going to revert back to me by itself. But the problem is, according to the Rush, I blew it. According to the Rush, I gave it as a kid in the Olam. So my options are becoming very, very limited. Unless one wants to go down a different route. Unless one wants to go down the route of that Mordechai and say, listen, I'm not going to give it to my child at all. I'm going to lend it to my child. I'm going to give him a lulav hashol. I'm going to say, or I'm going to have in mind explicitly, I'm not giving this to you. I'm merely lending it to you. So once I do that, that solves all the subsequent problems for me. The problem that it does cause is that, well, maybe he's not Yotzei. So that depends on the chinuch issue. So if you hold like the Ritva's Diyuk for the Gemara in the beginning of Sukkah, that chinuch requires to mamish replica the Maisa Mitzvah, the Chetzah Mitzvah in its entirety, so then this is going to fall short, then I wouldn't be Yotzei in the din of chinuch, so you ended up wasting your time. But according to the Mordechai, who says that you need not do it precisely, as long as it basically has the Tzuras HaMitzvah, that would be good enough. So I would tell somebody who's in one of these pickles, the guy's stuck on the first day, he only has one Luvan Esrog, and he didn't buy his child a Luvan Esrog. So I would say, Leis Breira, so be Yotzei the Mitzvah first yourself, and then lend it to your child. According to the Ritva, you're not being Yotzei Chinuch. So what do you do? Next year, buy another set of Luvan Esrog. If you're so worried about the Ritva, I would think that B'Shas HaChak, you would have to rely upon the view of the Mordechai. I would say that it gets even more complicated. Let's say you want to give it, let's say a little girl wants it. So the little girl wants to shake a Luvan Esrog. So here, she's not really Chayavis in Luvan Esrog. Even when she's older, she's not really Chayavis. So she wants to do it anyway. Okay, so you want to go through the motions, let her do it. But I would say to give it to her as a matana and then end up blowing it for yourself on the second day, it's a little bit of the priority is off a little bit. So I would say you should go down the route of the Mordechai. The Ikra Din, anyway. So one would have to rely on the opinion of the Mordechai. What exactly is this machlokes depend upon? The Mordechai and the Ritva, which is now impacting on our sugya matam nas tahachzir. So what should it depend upon? Whether when we do a mitzvah of chinuch, whether we have to replicate, it has to be a perfect chinuch, whether you give a little half-baked chinuch, as long as it looks good, it looks a little bit like chinuch, so that would be good enough. There is an important machlekes rishon. We spoke about this several times in the Wednesday night shiurim over the years about how to understand just what the ABCs, what chinuch is really all about. There's a major machlekes rishonim. When we say that a child is obligated in mitzvahs b'shem chinuch, what do those words mean? So some of the rishonim, Tosfos for example, says that the child is mamish chayev, not min haTorah. Chinuch is min derabanan. Min haTorah, you have to teach a child Torah. That's a pasuk shenat levanecha. But minator, you don't have to make sure that they put on tzitzis. Minator, you have to teach them about tzitzis. You don't have to make sure they wear tzitzis. Minator, you have to teach them about lulav, but you don't have to make sure they shake the lulav. But the Rabban and Chazal Institute, when the child is old enough, you have to actually go through the ma'aseh mitzvahs with them. So Tosfos writes that the nature of chinuch is that the child is now mechuyev mid the Rabbanon. Min haTorah, you only chayev in mitzvahs when you're over by mitzvah. Mid the Rabbanon, when you're 7, 8, 9, whatever it is, you become chayev in mitzvahs on love of the Rabbanon. And the Ramban in the third Bech of Brachas disagrees with that understanding. The Ramban says, a child is never obligated in mitzvahs. A child is not chayev in mitzvahs, not min haTorah, not mid the Rabbanon. So what is chinuch all about? Chinuch is a mitzvah mutelas al ha'av. The father has an obligation to begin to train the child. The same way the father has an obligation to train the child in other things. He has to teach him Torah, teach him a trade. He has to teach him how to do the ma'aseh and mitzvahs. It's a chavis ha'av. The Rabbanon Chazal instituted a chavis ha'av. But the child, from the child's vantage point, the child is not a mechuy b'dover altogether. At the end of the day, the child has to do the mitzvah. Who cares whether it's his chiyuv or whether it's the father's chiyuv? So it's a big machlekes to be shown him. What if there's no father? What if there's a child? There's a 12-year-old boy floating around, and the father's not here. The father's not alive. The father's out of town. The father's not from. There's nobody around to be mechalach this child. Am I mechuyuv to step up to the plate and be mechalach somebody else's child? I mean, it's a nice thing to do, but is that a real bona fide chiyuv? I have to make sure he has a piyatitz to where he hears Kiddush and Shabbos. Is that my chiyuv or not? So that's a big machlek. Yisrael Tosfos quotes two opinions about this. Whether there's a chiyuv chinuch on yanim on somebody else's child. What's the shailam? So the chiyuv of the child depends on this issue. If you hold that chinuch means that the child is mamash mechuyuv bedavar, so then I have to help Klal Yisrael. I have to help everybody fulfill their obligations. So if the child's here, and I can arrange for him to get a pair of tzitzis, for him to hear a Kriyas Megillah, him to light Chanukah candles, I have to try to do whatever I can to help every Jew. I have to try to help him to do whatever he can. But if you hold that the mitzvah of chinuch, is not, the child's not really mechubitavar. It's the father who's the mechubitavar. The father's not alive. Sometimes the father's not Jewish. You have a Jewish child, the father's not even Jewish. So what do I have to step up to the plate for? Who am I helping? The father's not around anymore. So what am I gaining by going ahead and helping out the father who's no longer alive? The father's not Jewish in the first place. So one could argue that this issue that the Rishonim are debating about just how literal chinuch has to be, how exact chinuch has to be, may depend upon this point. If you hold that the chiyuv of chinuch means that basically every male Jew at the age of 13 is chayav min haTorah and lulav, and every male Jew at the age of 8 or so is chayav and lulav min derabanan. So if the name of the game is you're chayav and lulav min derabanan, so chayav and lulav min derabanan means chayav and lulav min derabanan. So lulav on the first day means a lulav, that's lachev, a lulav that meets all the criteria, a lulav that's a kosher lulav. How can I mislead the child by giving him a lulav? That's no good. So I would be mechuyif to make sure that he gets a lulav that belongs to him, and then we run into all our problems with Matanos Achs, etc. But if you hold that chinuch is not really that, the child's not chayiv at all. It's not chayiv in a Torah, not chayiv in a Rabban. The father's got to start to train the child. The father's got to give him proper guidance. In the same way, the father has to teach him how to swim. He's got to teach him a trade. He's got to do all kinds of different things to help the child get onto his own 2 feet when he gets older. So too, it shouldn't be that the child's going to reach bar mitzvah, he never heard of a lulav before. Child's going to reach bar mitzvah, he never heard of Kriyas Megillah. So when he's 7, 8, 9, 10 years old, they have to already get him into training. Does it mean I have to make it perfect? What if I make it perfect? He's not chayv anyway. He's not even a mechuyav bedavar in mitzvahs. It's just a training exercise. So for training, like the halva of avodah, we have a spring training. So you don't do things in spring training exactly like you do in a regular game. They throw the pitcher in for one or two innings, they take him out. The goal of spring training is not to have a game. It doesn't count anyway. It's not going to the records anyway. The goal of spring training is to get him into training, to get things into the proper flow of things. So I can get him into the proper flow of things by giving him a lulav that doesn't technically belong to Midianim Momenis. If you hold that he's b'chuy b'dover mitzvahs, b'dirabonim, then he has to own that lulav in Cheshem Mishpat, then you better figure out Rosh or Ben and figure how to own that lulav. If you hold that the goal of chinuch is not that, the goal of chinuch is just to get the ball rolling a little bit, so then who cares whether he owns it, doesn't own it, the whole thing doesn't matter. So, kopanim, these two sugyas begin to overlap. The sugya of matanah manas l'hachzer and the sugya of chinuch now become very, very much related to one another. So, and it meaning this way, this is a good bridge between the Maseches Kedushin and Maseches Sukkos. Hopefully, that's Hashem at some point at the end of the summer. So we'll regroup. We'll send out the email. We'll regroup. Hopefully, that's Hashem. We'll begin from the beginning of Maseches Sukkos.